You're listening to Cattails.
Hi, I'm Kat, and welcome to Cattails. In this edition, I catch up with Sandy Newman, lead singer and guitarist of pop sensation of the 60s and 70s, The Marmalade. Now, The Marmalade may be best known for such hits as Reflection of My Life, Rainbow, Falling Apart at the Seams, and of course Lennon and McCartney's Obladee Oblada. But Sandy Newman is a whole lot more than that. Singer-songwriter, solo performer, and all-round fabulous guy, Sandy chats to me about his early life and his formative years. This is The One with Sandy Newman.
Hurry up!
Come in from wherever you come in from the cold, bless
it. Yes, something like that. I like that.
Where should I start? Sandy. Where should I start?
I don't remember the beginning.
The beginning. Neither
some people say they do. Some people. I heard this on the radio on the way up here. Some people say they remember being born. I can't get that together.
No, they can't.
No, I can't imagine that.
I think my earliest memory must be about three. Two and a half? Yeah,
do you know what? I'm not really sure. I would be making up a story if I was to actually guess my real one, because I don't remember it.
Do you not remember?
I remember early years in the house that we lived in, but because I was such a young... I was the youngest of the family by a long chalk.
Okay.
I was probably... To view it from a huge distance, I was probably a spoiled brat by comparison.
I can't believe that.
I know that I got away with an awful lot of things that none of my brother or sisters got away with. Obviously, two elder sisters.
But they kept you in check.
10 and 8 years older than me. So I was the toy when I was born. Think about it.
Yeah. You were dressed up
this
in
is my wee
clothing.
Brother.
Yeah, I bet.
In the proper pram, dare I say it.
Oh, yes. Well,
having looked back at the photographs of me scowling as a child, yes.
A perambula.
Oh, proper stuff.
Terrific. Did they put little bonnets on you?
Yeah, all that. Yeah. All laced up. You know. Much knitting required.
Oh, no.
Well, there was much knitting, wasn't there?
There was a lot of knitting everywhere. Yes.
Because there wasn't the modern distraction.
No, that's
so I remember much of that in the house that we lived in, which was number 226 Berkeley Street in Glasgow.
Oh, you can remember
which
the
was best. Right on a corner. And we were on the fourth floor.
Oh, right.
And I looked up to the St Andrew's Halls at the top of Berkeley Street, which was just before Bath Street with the King's Theatre. It was fabulous.
We've talked about Glasgow before because my mum was born in Glasgow. Right. And so I've got that connection with Glasgow. I'm quite familiar with it. And it was the old Gorbals. It should hate me for saying this. Oh, my God. The Gorbals
at the
time.
No, but it was where it was. Wasn't it?
When that's where she was born, in that part of Glasgow. So yeah. So where in comparison were you?
I was
you?
On the other side of the river.
Oh, the posh side.
Well...
Yeah, he was.
I was on the north side. and my first 8 years of existence were very close to a place called Finiston, which is just outside the main city, the real main city.
Yeah.
And of course, in these days, it was very much a case of... it was an industrial environment.
It was.
Everything was. At the corner of our place to the right, I can remember being fascinated by the beer. There was a pub right in the corner. The Berkeley Bar, strangely enough. But you were very close to the river. Anyway,
yeah,
you were close to the river, you know, it was very close. So therefore you were close to all forms of industry.
Yeah.
Mainly shipyards.
It was all
and associated. It was completely all the way up.
Yeah.
All the way up the river. Both sides.
Crazy, isn't it?
So my father worked in the Clyde Trust, which was the Port Authority river stuff.
Oh, wow.
And he was an engineer in one of the ferries.
That was
what he did, yeah.
Wow.
So he worked on the Finiston Ferry, which was local to where we lived at that time.
There
was an environment of wee working men with cloth caps and a Friday night, you know. Wee boys and girls getting their dad out of the pub so that the mother could get the wages before they pissed it against the wall.
I love it. That's great.
But yeah, I just remember being fascinated because it was the days when they opened up this grate and all these beer barrels rolled underneath the pub. So that's one of my early memories of being something that really struck me. It's like, wow.
Wow, what's all this about?
And about all these wee men, you know, there's all these wee men everywhere, you know.
Oh, I'm crazy. Oh, yeah. Yeah, all down the pub. Having a quick half.
So how long were you in Glasgow for before you came down to this side of the border?
Well, I mean, I was there when we left that particular part of the city. My father moved to Renfrew Ferry, and we moved out of town, which was, I mean, I don't even think it's 4 miles, but it was like 100 miles in these days. And the back gardens had flowers on them. Goodness gracious. And it was, you know, each house had, it was a back garden, sort of communal back garden with the dustbin and the middens, as it was called. And you know, you could actually get a little bit of a plot. I remember my dad had a little bit of a plot in the corner. He could grow vegetables. We were on the ground floor, so he had the front garden, which faced on Dumbarton Road, which was the main road out of Glasgow towards Clyde Bank.
Yeah, sure.
Which was John Brown's. And again, shipyards, Harland and Wolff's. All of that was local. Harland and Wolff's still there. So I lived there all my life until I got married.
Wow.
In Scotstoun. I lived in Scotstoun.
Wow.
Which was all shipyard. The Albion, which was British Leyland's coachworks place. It was just total industry. It was all wee men with cloth caps and busy.
God, that's amazing.
And when I was...
Sorry, I was going to say, has that all fed your songwriting and your experiences have all come together when you've actually produced your music? Has it fed in or has it been sort of like a...
No, if I'd versed towards writing as a... As an actual, what's the word, you know, like writing plays or writing books or little bits and pieces, it may have had an influence, but no, all my influence was just washed over with music and the whole explosion of this freedom of generation. And, you know, I mean, it was obviously you're a young kid, so the sex came into the gig of the game as well. You know, being a pop star seemed better than being a welder.
Choices.
It seemed that way, you know. Yeah. Never sure. Well done.
Let me think about this.
No, I don't think. No, but you know, that was it. You know.
Yeah. So that's what attracted you into the profession, then.
Well,
I take
music,
it.
Music. I mean, I always find it a bit crass. It wasn't really in the family as such.
Mm.
You know, my dad, we had a piano that had come from Kirkcaldy because my mother had come from Kirkcaldy, and some auntie had died, so we had this thing. And one of my elder sisters, she had piano lessons. She was very good for a while. And then she stopped it because, you know, jazz club and young boys and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
All the nightmare scenarios of, you're not going out with that boy, and you're not with that boy, right? All that stuff. But that was where it was, you know. I mean, I'm really quite happy, actually. I never had any girls in some way. Yeah, because there's obviously a period of... John's always saying that to me, my son John. There's going to come a time, Dad.
Yeah, you know, the memoirs. There will be. There will be. The kiss and tells.
Yeah. Is that boy coming around here? So I remember all these things in my older family. And as I say, that's why I was the one to get away with murder, because they didn't.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, you were the young.
They really didn't.
Oh, that's sweet.
And of course, that was when jazz came. Jazz had come along by then. It hadn't come along. It was always there. You know, there was the 40s and the stuff, and there was all these records and things that were around, you know, that you grew with. And these days, there was the light program.
Yes.
And on a Sunday, when you had Sunday dinner, whatever the hell that was, but it was definitely Sunday dinner. We always ate well because my father really, he had a better knowledge of proper diet than most people.
Yeah,
because he'd been born and brought up in Burma.
Okay.
His father was chief of customs for the British government, so.
Right. It's a bit
different
of a,
sort of measuring.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, sure.
So we would get things, and I would go to school, and as a young boy, I remember, so, you'd tell him what you had for your dinner, and I'd go, what? What's that?
A vegetable? A carrot?
Yeah. And obviously I grew up on curries because...
Yeah.
Not as a massive thing, but I grew up on curries. And, you know, before there was curry, right? There was maybe one in Glasgow.
Wow.
But I grew up on curries.
See, that's incredible, isn't it? Before even that sort of like the...
Oh, it's long before.
Yeah, because I mean, that what and you're
I say,
talking about
There may
is...
have been one or two restaurants in London. There may have been one or two in Scotland, if there was. I don't even think there was.
Was that the
influence of your father? And then things started to open up a bit, and you get the Indian shots, which my dad would gravitate towards, to try and get things that he remembered that he hadn't seen for years, and you know.
Wow.
You know, stuff like that would appear. But I mean, you didn't have any sense of measure on that because you're just a rugrat. You
That's
know,
right. No, no.
Bumbling around.
Rugrat.
You know?
I love that. Yeah. Rugrat. Well. That's great, though, isn't it? Because obviously you had all these influences coming in your subconscious as a young age, you know, and that's sort of come through as you don't realise it at the time, as you're saying there.
No, you don't.
And then later in life, you look back and you think, hello, that was a bit different. That's a bit unusual. And you only appreciate the yardstick.
The differential was kind of always there. It was a. My mother came from Fife as well. I wasn't, you know, people have said to me through my lifetime, oh, you come from Glasgow? You don't have a Glasgow accent. I mean, what's a Glasgow accent?
Oh, not sure.
She might go like that. No, talk a lot of shit. No, yeah, see you. Yeah, chimney, yeah, you bugger.
You know, that is a Glasgow accent. Mm. But I never spoke like that.
No.
And we never spoke like that. And we were definitely encouraged not to speak like that.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't have to be encouraged.
It was natural.
Mm. Oh, and I don't mean we were super polite, because we weren't in any way upper class or upper anything. But
no.
Although my mum would have liked to think that. But then yes. A lot of mums did in these
days.
Of
course, of course. Yeah, oh, that's nice though, isn't it? Uh-huh. So what was the introduction to music for you then? If it wasn't a musical family, it was...
Well, as I say, there was the piano then. Well, my brother played violin.
Okay.
And he's basically 6 years older than me. Sparing a few months. And that was just that thing, you know.
Yeah, so around it.
He did, so I did, and I went to his violin teacher, who was fabulous. I remember him, albeit I was a really young kid, I remember it really clearly, because he was a fascinating person too. He's still in my head,
uh-huh.
Picture of him. I can see him.
Oh, wow.
He was a Polish Jew.
Crikey.
Which was called a Polak or something, I think. In these days, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And he'd tight curly hair, was thick set, big thick lips. I mean, he used to get really passionate about the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
And when he got really passionate, he would foam at the mouth. I've been trying to get that one together, but it's not working for me.
The drool.
No, I just dribbled. No, but I used to, and the place I got taught violin was my brother's senior secondary school, because by that time, he'd just go in there, and it was the same room, and it had fish tanks in it. But it was the passion that this man stuck with me, and it has stuck with me all my life.
Really?
If I think about passion,
you Mr. Ruddick. Oh, wow, isn't that incredible? That's so vivid in your mind. And it's kind of...
I didn't have a lot of teachers after. The violin went out the window when we moved to Scotstoun from the centre of Glasgow, uh-huh. because the violin teacher I had at the new school was a wispy little woman.
Oh.
And I'm not kidding. It sounds terrible to say, but she had such a bad squint.
Oh.
Even as a child, it was really hard to be in the same room and take it seriously. And that sounds so bad, but it was...
Oh...
And super thin, and it's like so. From coming from
that thick set guy,
to
a little wispy lady.
So I stopped playing a violin.
What influence it has on you as a child, though, isn't it? And how that sort of impacts on you, and if that could change your whole life, clearly that. The violin playing out the window.
No, it does. It does.
Did the guitar playing come in at that stage, or when
I always say it this way. I followed on from my brother. There was a guitar in the house because he started playing. He got interested in the early folk, you know, which was chronologically fine. And after the trad jazz, and he was never a modern jazz. He used to go to trad clubs and stuff.
Okay.
But a lot of the traditional clubs became pop venues.
Yeah.
Like the Maryland in Glasgow was a... Traditionally, it was a dance class. It was a dance thing.
Okay, like dance.
People
school.
Went. My eldest sisters went there to learn dance.
Oh, okay.
And then it became a trad jazz club.
Yeah.
And then it became a bit. So along with trad jazz came some of the early blues artists that came over to work for fuck. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, excuse me.
That's right. No, it's fine.
To work for nothing in this country, you know. You know, your Sonny Boy Williamsons and all that came over and just.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have any work in America.
Yeah.
What? Fuck off, black bastard. You know, that was.
And they came and found themselves.
So all that came over here, and then they became. They became sort of half jazz clubs, half beat clubs, and then they became beat clubs. And,
okay.
And I played there. I played there at the Maryland with I call him my mentor.
And who was that?
A guy called Alan Kelly.
Oh, okay.
He ran bands, much senior. He was a much more senior person to me. And I'd been in this situation with this bass player. I loved the band that he'd ran, but then it split up. And the reason it split up was because the band he ran was called The In Crowd.
Okay.
And The In Crowd had this young, spotty singer whose name was Hamish Stewart. Right?
Yeah.
Hamish then went on to form a band under management with a band called The Dream Police. And Hamish then went on to be Average White Band.
Oh, right, okay.
Hamish Stewart.
Yeah, yeah. Hamish on hair. I'm just quoting something from the old Gravesville test.
And if I'm having fish and chips, I'll have half a bottle of sauce on it. That's what I remember.
Big hair like this.
And at that time, we were shared the same girlfriend and stuff. You know, it's like incestuous past. It's quite bizarre. I say shared the same girlfriend. Well,
consecutively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about months, but... Months were years in these times.
Well, this is it.
Formative times seem much longer than... Because I look back and I have a problem remembering exactly how long I was doing what I was doing. And if it was formative, it seems much longer.
It does, doesn't it?
And I was always the young one. I was a young one in the family. I was a young one in the business. But the fact that I was a young one in the family was the fact that I had the knowledge of, albeit... secondary of the music, because I'd heard it and I hadn't digested it and learned it, but it was in my head. It wasn't something alien to my ears, like old rock and roll records. I remember really clearly certain records that came into the house.
Oh, right, okay.
I really remember it.
What sort of influences were there then?
Well, the big deal ones was the early rock and roll shit.
Right.
I mean, Elvis. I was more my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in with Elvis, and he came in with... It's really hard to pick a one.
You pick
a representative one if you have to.
Yeah.
But the one that actually sticks out in my mind was Little Richard.
Oh, right, okay. Oh, we're a bit wilder
on a 78.
Then. Yeah, oh,
with that
record.
Yes. As was Heartbreak Hotel. It was that crossover thing. But as a kid, you don't know what it is. You just know there's this thing going on.
It's just music, isn't it? Influence.
Yeah.
That's great, though, isn't it?
So living with me and has been able to carry me through. Because I find now that at my age, I'm coming up 67, a lot of what I considered to be for many years my contemporaries are not. They're actually much older than I am.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it's quite difficult sometimes. So.
Yeah, it's like that's you being the baby, isn't it? When you're going through the family.
Yeah, but I'm not now. Albeit our drummer's older than me.
Oh, they are.
Which is a great thing, actually. by a month.
By a month.
But it matters. Great because it's... our last drummer, Damon Sawyer, is a fabulous drummer. But you can't, at this stage in life, you find that... albeit it's nothing you're doing is nothing groundbreaking. But you're doing something that I understand and he understands.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas 15, 20 years younger, they can't understand.
Yeah, it's a different thing.
And it's not because you know something that they don't,
mm-hmm.
musically. It's just because they kind of get the vibe of it and what it actually meant to the people that you're playing to.
Yes.
As opposed to, oh, I'm not playing that one. No, shit that one.
Yeah.
No, it's not, because they fucking love it.
Yes.
And it's about how you deliver it.
That's right.
And that's not a spoken thing. I don't like having to do that. I never have.
Mm.
Which, in some ways, I'm not a great communicator from that point of view, because I don't like to be the boss, but I'm perceived as the boss. That's true.
Yeah, of course.
I've kind of...
Well, Marmalade, you know, is Sandy Newman, let's be honest. That's, you know...
That's the way it's been perceived, and I've had that rammed down my face for about 25, 30 years.
But, come on.
Dave D was... Well, I know, but...
Well, you're being modest. You're being modest.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm being, but it is what it is.
You're being modest. Marmalade is sad.
Well, but then there's always that thing. Who's irreplaceable? Nobody.
No, but then you see, to live on, the band must have yourself, you know, Alan as well, an original member, and that. So there's kind
but
of
it's
like
not
that,
an original member.
You know, well, it's had that transition though. But Alan's been in
it's
a long
been
time.
It's been there since 1979.
Wow, that's a lifetime anyway.
That's exactly. It's all a lifetime.
But well, do you know what you're describing there is quite refreshing, actually, because what you're suggesting is actually after Alan, yourself, move on, actually Marmalade could live on with John, your son, into a new year, maybe?
Well, John's got a new situation that's arising that may be of use to him as a career, not as a career move, to be honest, but as an earner, proper earner. Mm. You know, I mean,
he's got his own stuff going on, hasn't he?
He's a young man. He's not a young man. He's 39. He's 40 this year.
Yeah.
So he's not a young man. He's got two girls and he's got another eldest daughter who's 17 in February. And, you know, commitments come in life and your chance goes in some ways.
Yeah, well, you've got to grasp it while you can.
But the talent doesn't go away with him.
No.
The drive and the talent. I mean, if you saw him, if you saw him physically,
He's changed quite a lot since I last saw him.
Dramatically.
I know.
Somewhere, some new planet that I never thought would happen. Because he was always a bit chubby, John.
Now he's super fit. Yeah.
Super.
Well, last time I saw John was when we were doing the penultimate, wasn't it? And, you know, that's a few years ago now since we were working on the penultimate project. And that's probably about 5 years ago now, you know, isn't it? Which makes it feels a bit, you know, painful, doesn't it? But, yeah, so John has changed quite a bit. He's got into this health fit.
And that's only the last 18 months.
Oh, wow.
He started running.
Yeah, that's
And stopped smoking fags, because I'd stopped smoking fags.
Well, he does
the old puffer stuff, you know.
The vapor thing.
Yeah, all that stuff. Oh, okay. Big time. He does it big time. But he took to the running.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And
he's got friends that do it, and he does it, and he's still... He's not soldiering a cause. Mm-hmm. He just does it.
Yeah.
It's part of his routine, though.
Yeah.
It's completely part of his routine. And I can't believe the amount of weight he's lost.
Yeah.
And the state of health that he's in terms of...
Well, that's good. That's good.
And he's at a great age to be like that.
Yeah.
I'm viewing as a parent, of course.
Yeah, of course.
I have to say my boys are my favourites.
And the fact you've got two, yes,
yeah.
makes it nice and easy. But, of course, you know, you've given up smoking, haven't you? You know,
I'm a year ago, October.
Yeah.
So it's well over a year. What is that, a year?
Yeah, it's just wild.
Four months.
Well, 3 months. Yeah, that's good.
A year and 4 months.
That's good going. And, you know, you've had a knee operation, I know. But all sense and purpose, you're still out there gigging with Marmalade.
I'm still doing what I do. And it's got a validity for what it is. And I say that, you know. But the validity of it is where I believe it belongs is becoming less and less, because it is becoming less and less, and there's no way it can't be.
Yeah.
Because it's only with those who really get a thing about it. Because there's other people who could go out and play the same tunes and get the same reaction to the same tunes with a different style of audience. That's what I mean. Nobody's irreplaceable. But the ethic...
Yeah.
The ethic is irreplaceable. And that's where I carry it.
Yes, and you've got the history with the band, haven't you?
Well, I've got the history, but I've also got the ethic, because I knew where it was. It's not that I knew where it was and learned it. I always had a respect for it before I was even involved in it at all.
Okay.
And liked where it was and knew what it did to people.
Right, okay, that's interesting.
And I still view it that way. It was a great live band. They had great vocals and a bit of energy involved.
Right, okay.
Energy being interest, you know.
Yeah, an interaction with the crowd maybe as well.
Yeah, because, well, that's energy. Mm. That's being aware, if you like.
Yeah, I'd see where you're coming from.
That's the way I view it, and that's the way... I don't craft a performance. I don't think about it. The only time I'll craft anything is if you're on a big festival. The only time I'll throw something round as to how we open the show is if somebody does something dramatically different at the end of their show that makes you want to do that because you think it might work better doing that.
Right.
Other than that, just fucking do what you do.
Yes, yeah.
And they get what they get. And if they don't like it, then stuff them.
Yeah, well, that's it. They come to see what you're performing, and that's your performance.
Yeah,
but that's good.
I like to be in the places that's why they're coming in, or mainly some of them, at least, that's why they're coming in the first place.
Yes.
is to recapture something, because that's what it is. You're not educating anybody.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, how long is
Except that we get still to, you know, we still do a couple of the tracks from the album. Well, there's a lot of tracks on the album that are retro tracks. So I had to bleat on about that to try and sell some fucking album. but we always do better. Always do it. And it gets treated like a new song.
Yeah.
By unheard, unspoken. Because I know that it works.
I know, and I've seen you many a times, Andy, and I know that when you've performed these old tracks, and I think you're being a little bit sort of like coy there, because actually when you've performed them, they have all sounded fresh. And I mean, that's the thing. It may be an old track that you've performed many, many a time, but you bring something new to it every time you've done it.
Well, that's only in the ear and the eye of the person that's receiving it, really.
Of course, yeah.
Well, I like to think of the performance on the night is the performance on the night, you know?
Yeah, sure.
The stuff goes through your head. I'm in great admiration of actors that do stage because it's like months and months and months.
Oh, same thing.
I was fortunate enough to get to see something that I loved the story anyway, a story Network, which was originally a film in the 70s, 76 actually. I thought it was earlier than that, but it was 1976, and it had an actor called Peter Finch.
Okay.
And the female support lead was Faye Dunaway. And it was about media.
Okay, interesting.
And you would love it.
I would.
You would absolutely love it anyway.
Yeah.
But the guy that did, I don't know if you're familiar with a thing called Breaking Bad.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, did you watch it?
I didn't, but I know it's been extremely good. But you're aware
of it.
Yeah.
So the guy that did it, Bryan Cranston, who I've become a fan of, is like... superlative stuff. And my eldest son, Alec Newman, he said, Dad, Cranston's coming in next year. This was last year. To do Network. I went, what?
Because of course, he's an actor, isn't he?
Two tickets.
He's a very accomplished actor.
Oh, fucking hell. It's spectacular. It's running at the National.
Oh.
But it's been running since November. You know? So it's been running since the early November, or late October, I think, the previews. So the rehearsals would have started last September. Now, my son's done all that stuff. He's done the world tours with Jacoby and King Lear and all that stuff. So I know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
But then that's where my admiration comes in, because what I do is fucking transitory compared to what these guys do.
Yeah.
And they have to deliver.
Yes.
Every single time.
Yes, they have to do the same
Which is
kind of performance, don't
they?
Which
is eight shows a week.
Yeah.
You get two matinees. You get a Saturday and a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who you are or how much you're being paid, you've got to deliver.
And it's the first time every time, isn't it? Whereas what you're doing is you can change it and you can
interpret. I can flute.
Yeah. Well, you can interpret.
I mean, sometimes I throw it away, you know.
I'm sure you don't.
But they don't. They don't know.
No.
You know, I call it the home run. It's terribly... It's a terribly flippant way to talk, but it doesn't matter what band there is. There's certain songs, if they're there to see you in any shape or form, there's certain songs that they just want to hear, no matter when or what or whatever.
Yeah.
So the home run for us is a home run, and it's the last three tunes, and it doesn't matter where you are.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what's happened before it.
Yeah.
Inevitably, people go,
They do. And that's all that
And it's
does
an easy home run,
because
you've got a different, you know, you've got a bit of...
Yeah.
But you've got a bit of dancing, leaping about stuff, whatever, even if it's a seated audience. And you've got Reflections, which is a quality song.
Yeah,
it's a
great song.
And it's always delivered well.
Yeah.
And then you've got Obladi, which is just nonsense. Yeah. Good night, thank you, stand on your feet, thank you very much, which is everybody wants to do anyway.
But they want
to
hear it, don't
even
they?
Even if it's not the interval, they still want to stand up. You know?
Yeah, I know.
It's the home run.
Yeah.
That's what I call. As soon as you get to the home run, you know you're home and dry.
Yeah, you're home and dry, yeah. So what's next for you then? You know, you've been working with Marmalade. It will continue, clearly. And you've also got your solo career.
It'll do what it does. I don't know. There's no way... I've never really thought about it too deeply. The only logical thing that in my head that could pass on to anybody in terms of... The ownership's a bit strong, but that's what it is. And as far as a trading entity is concerned, it's down to me. And that's something that I could pass on. But that's only who am I going to pass it on to? The only person would be John, of course. Mm-hmm. He's in it. Mm-hmm. And yes. he's the only person I know that's capable of maintaining some of the ethic. But you can't expect that anybody would maintain all of the ethic. And to be perfectly honest, you get to a stage in time, not mm-hmm. in my life, you get to a stage in time where who gives a shit?
Yes,
because we play all these things that I get irate about, which mean nothing to the public. We'll go to a festival or play somewhere with something, and I look at who's on it and who's in the bands, and I go, it's got nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, they get to that stage, isn't it? Where
people could say that.
Ages.
If I'm not there anymore and Alan Holmes is not there anymore, there's no link to the past at all, mm-hmm. especially me, because at least I had the last mm-hmm. hit record and all the period of success where serious writers and producers were kind of around about Sandy Newman, because I was the guy that sang the songs.
Yes.
So I don't have a problem with, I've done nothing in this business, I don't have a problem with that. However, beyond that, it's the same as all these other people. Yeah. I judge and go, well, I don't care what they play. Yeah. It's fucking nothing to do with anything. So that's what I don't want it to become that. The only thing it could become with any kind of formal legacy is if John did it. And that would only be up to him, not up to me.
No, would
I want him to do it?
Maybe.
He is what he is.
Yeah.
He takes a pride in what he does.
Of course.
But my thing was the same as when he... It was him that said to me, do you have a biscuit?
No, I'm fine, thank you.
No, he didn't say have a biscuit.
I didn't have a biscuit.
I'm saying, do you have a biscuit?
I'm fine.
This biscuits will melt.
Those biscuits are on the table.
So
Marmalade Mate will go on for as long as, and then we will see.
It'll go
it
on in people's memory, and the one thing that will go on in people's memory are the classic hit records, and the main one of them
course.
Is that, without question or doubt, is Reflections of My Life.
I would say so.
No, but it was a timepiece. It was at a time. It was it's a very esoteric lyric, to be honest.
But a great tune, and people want to come and hear it, don't they? So if somebody wanted to come...
But it was tied into, when you look at it historically, it was tied into the Vietnam War, which is why it was...
It wasn't
written about that.
Okay.
But that was when it was... Champion. That was why it was such a big record in America.
Right.
That was why.
Okay.
Because of the...
The timing and the retrospective sort of, or the visuality. So if people want to come and see you then, Sandy, where can they come and see you? Where do they go for all the dates, details of the gigs?
Where are we working recently? We don't do much, to be honest.
You do quite. So the best place to go is maybe marmalade.net?
And have
And that'll have all the gigs
on
it?
That's been... Yeah, the website's been updated for the last year and 2 months.
Good.
It's all sitting there waiting for me to give them a biog, which makes me go...
Uh-oh.
You need a bio.
That's a lot of work. I
can't help but... You know firsthand. I'm not negative about it. It's like, I've got to fucking sit right about about me.
It's hard to do that about yourself, though, isn't it?
I'll get my son to do it, because he's coming to do basically what you're doing.
Oh.
He wants to catalogue what his dad's done in his life and from his perspective.
And why not? What a legacy you've got.
Well, he's done it for his father-in-law. He didn't do it for that purpose. He just wanted to do it because his father-in-law was worked at the slaughterhouse.
Oh, wow.
In Glasgow.
Oh, in Glasgow as well.
And I was a bouncer at the Denison Palais, which was an early ballroom, which was, you're talking about a rough area.
Oh, really?
And if you're talking about anybody that worked in the slaughterhouse, you're talking about a lot of people
hard
who are
guy.
Very drunk and very violent.
Oh, right.
So there's he captured all this stuff.
Oh,
he wants to do it with me. So,
that's good.
Over a few sessions, but he sent me some elementary questions. And I say what I say to people. I said, whatever happens in the day, whatever.
That's good there. And you want to capture it all, and that's a really good thing. And you know what, Sandy? We'll sit down and have another chat. Another time, and we'll capture more of it, because I think it's an extremely interesting story.
Well, Kat, it's been a pleasure.
And it's been lovely.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Lovely to see you again.
Thank you, Miller.
See you soon. You've been listening to Cat Tales.
To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattales.co.uk.